Sasomi, and you're listening to WGXC Accra 90.7 FM, hands-on creative community radio for Greene and Columbia County.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network.
I'm Tom Rowe in Accra, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show. And we've got a busy show today on the theme of affordable housing, or the lack thereof, in the Hudson Valley and Capital Region, as all sorts of people have moved to the area during the pandemic and driven prices up as demand increases and supply decreases. And that's made worse by the lack of local hotel rooms and the many short-term rental units that are taking stock out of the housing market locally. It all adds up to higher prices, gentrification, and local people being forced out of their homes because of economic reasons. We'll hear a report from WOC's Moses Nagel about low-income tenants in the Capital Region, and we'll also hear WGXC's Randall Martin and Reverend Kim Singletary this morning speak with Columbia County Fair Housing Department Director Bill Fisher and Columbia County Housing Authority Chair Teresa Mayhew about the local housing crisis on the WGXC Morning Show, and it all starts after the local news, which is next. Stay tuned.
This is the news. This is the network. Network.
Unhappy about something you heard on All Together Now? Or maybe you have a strong opinion about an issue. Energy, agriculture, the environment, the Common Core standards, or broadband access. Don't keep it to yourself. Call 518-291-9492 and leave a 3-minute message, and we'll play it on the air. Leave a 3-minute message, 518-291-9492, with your take for all you hear. Again, that number is 518-291-9492. To leave a 3-minute message that may be played on All Together Now. Thanks for getting involved in your local community. WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by Greenville Drive-In 32, a destination for movies and music under the stars of the Northern Catskills since 1959. Seasonal programming information at drivein32.com or 518-966-2177.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Delmar Wellness Center of Alachua, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here. Mid-Hudson News is reporting that attorney Kyle Vanderwater of Hyde Park, the Republican candidate for Congress against incumbent Antonio Delgado in 2020, died on September 7th. In July, Vanderwater, 41, announced he would challenge the Rhinebeck Democrat again in 2022. But by mid-August, he disclosed on social media that he had changed his mind, saying, quote, "Unfortunately, circumstances in my life have changed, and I am no longer able to give 110% towards this endeavor." For the good of the party and the district, I have decided to withdraw my candidacy, unquote. Dutchess County Executive Mark Molinaro confirmed Vandewater's death in a statement Tuesday evening. Quote, my heart is broken for Kyle's children and family, unquote, he said. Quote, my prayers are with them as they attempt to come to grips with this absolute tragedy. Kyle was a war hero who put his life and well-being on the line for his country. We owe him, his family, and all of our brave servicemen and women everything for the sacrifices they have made, unquote. Vandewater served 8 years on active duty with the U.S. Army JAG Corps and 3 years with the U.S. Army Reserve. He had been an associate with Corbally, Gartland, and Rapalier in Poughkeepsie since 2014. On Tuesday, the town of Poughkeepsie police responded to a call of a man down at the Poughkeepsie Rural Cemetery. Police located the man and later identified him as Vandewater. Police sources say that the death is being investigated as a likely suicide. No additional details have been made available. Read more about this story at MidHudsonNews.com.
Roger Hannigan-Gilson in the Times Union reports that environmentalists are concerned about a proposal by a Yonkers-based company attempting to build a plant in the Catskill Park to convert food waste and other trash into paper products and I quote, biofuel pellets, end quote, that could replace coal. The plant would go in Delaware County, less than 2,000 feet from the Schoharie Creek near the Greene County border. Use Energy would attempt the first use of this technology in the U.S. with a goal of diverting more than 176 tons of garbage from landfills each year. So far, there have been two public information sessions about the proposal. Wes Gillingham, the associate director of Catskill Mountain Keeper, said there was a lot of opposition. Gillingham said, and I quote, Use Energy CEO Dan McSpeeden had a really hard time getting through his program because people were so angry. Something that needs to be considered in any proposal is whether the community where it is being placed wants it there. It's their community, end quote. Municipal garbage would be trucked to the plant from transfer stations within a 50-mile radius if the proposal is approved. The State Department of Environmental Conservation needs to decide whether the proposal could have enough impact on its surroundings to require a full environmental review. Lafarge in Ravenna has attempted to burn trash in its kilns and so far has not been allowed. A proposal to bury waste in Catskill was withdrawn a few years ago, too. Gillingham says, and I quote, At this point, this looks like a really bad proposal for the Catskills, end quote. Read more about this story in the Times Union.
Jeff Preval is reporting for WGRZ-TV that the state of New York will not extend federal pandemic unemployment programs that expired this past weekend. Governor Kathy Hochul said the state's unemployment insurance trust fund currently has a deficit of $11 billion as many employers continue to need help filling jobs and many New Yorkers remain unemployed. Even though the federal programs have expired, states are permitted to extend unemployment programs, according to the CARES Act. However, that will not happen in New York. Hochul said during a briefing Sunday about the Hurricane Ida cleanup, quote, what we determined was that the federal government has to okay allocations to us, and secondly, because our unemployment system was so overtaxed last year and a half that we now have an $11 billion deficit, unemployment insurance trust fund deficit, and the state law does not allow us any increases in resources as long as there is a deficit, unquote, Hochul said. The governor said she is instead focused on job retraining for the unemployed. Hochul said that she is looking for a detailed analysis on when the hospitality industry in Buffalo and other regions will come back. Read more about this story at WGRZ.com.
Mid-Hudson News reports that a bill that would prohibit elected officials from serving on the boards of industrial development agencies failed this year in the state legislature. State Senator James Scopus, a Democrat, sponsored the measure, which was approved in the Senate, did not win approval in the Assembly. He said, and I quote, I won't name names, but you can read between the lines. You had elected officials that served on the Orange County IDA board and many other IDA boards for many years. They will give out all these tax breaks, all these pilots, some of which are warranted and some of which are unwarranted. And then they run for higher office, and then the Rolodex comes out, and they can call up these folks, end quote. Scopus also suggested that some elected officials who serve on IDA boards get campaign contributions from those getting tax relief. Read more about this story at Mid-Hudson News.
Davis Donovan is reporting for WSHU-FM. The response of New York and Connecticut has been better than average for those state prison systems responded to the COVID-19 pandemic, according to a nationwide criminal justice group. However, advocates said both states could still do more. The Prison Policy Initiative gave the majority of states an F, while New York and Connecticut were given an F+. Wanda Bertram is with the Prison Policy Initiative, and she said the people incarcerated in the nation's prisons are dying of COVID-19 at much higher rates than the general population. Quote, because prisons have never been safe places for people to be during a pandemic, or really ever, unquote, Bertram said. The group graded each state based on about 30 metrics, like vaccination efforts for the incarcerated or early release for those at highest risk. Quote, releasing people and letting them go home during the pandemic is the best way of slowing down this virus inside prisons and jails, unquote, Bertram said. She said both states left key policy options on the table. Quote, for instance, Connecticut and New York actually released fewer people on parole in 2020 than they had in 2019, which is astonishing to me, unquote, Bertram said. She said New York fell short on some surprising metrics, too. Quote, all too often we think about mass incarceration and inhuman treatment as something that only happens in those famous tough-on-crime states like the Gulf states. But in New York, the vaccination rate behind bars is only 40%. So people are in real danger, unquote, Bertram said. The report gave New Jersey its highest grade, a C. The state led the country in releasing people. California got a C-, and no other state scored above a D. Read more about this story at WSHU.org.
Michael DeMasi reports in the Albany Business Review that the former Thompson House Resort, a 141-year-old, 110-room resort on Route 296 in Wyndham, has begun renovations. Wilder Hotels of Los Angeles bought the resort in June for $2.27 million, according to a deed filed in the county clerk's office. They are now calling the property Wilder Wyndham and expect to open in spring 2022. Wilder owns resorts in Hope Valley, California, and Tilghman Island, Maryland, and their Wilder Hope Valley in California Sierra Nevada Mountains was named one of the best new properties in the world by Travel and Leisure recently. The resort, with 20 acres and the Batavia Kill crossing the property, was owned by members of the Gotesh family since 1880, but Eric Gotesh of Wyndham couldn't be reached for comment. John Flanagan, founder and CEO of Wilder Hotels, would not say how much the company is spending on renovations. Read more about this story in the Albany Business Review.
And Melanie Lakosovic reports for Columbia Green Media that the toll takers on the Rip Van Winkle Bridge are about to lose their jobs. The electronic gantries to implement cashless tolling have been installed next to the toll booths on the west bank of the Hudson River, but officials aren't saying when exactly the current toll takers lose their jobs. Quote, no official date has been set yet for the launch of cashless tolling at the Rip Van Winkle Bridge, but we still are on track to do so this fall, unquote, said Christopher Stieber, public information officer for the New York State Bridge Authority. Quote, we continue to install equipment at the facility, and once complete, we will begin tests to ensure the equipment is properly functioning, unquote. Easy Pass users continue to pay $1.45 to enter Columbia County, while the sensors will read license plates of cars without Easy Pass and send a $1.75 charge to the car owner. All five Bridge Authority toll booths are being taken down, and the Newburgh Beacon Bridge went live July 7th with the new sensors. The Bear Mountain Bridge will be next, followed by the Rip Van Winkle Bridge. The current toll booth on the bridge won't be removed until next year. Quote, next spring when construction can occur, we plan to start reconfiguring the toll plaza to allow for seamless travel through the plaza, unquote, Stieber said. Quote, notably, westbound travelers who have just crossed the bridge will no longer have to hook to the right in order to pass around the toll booths like they currently do. Rather, they will keep traveling straight through in the vicinity of where lanes 2 and 3 currently are, unquote. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day. And now, here is your WGXC weather update. Your forecast for the next 2 days, well, on Wednesday, scattered showers and thunderstorms mainly after 4 p.m. It will be mostly sunny with a temperature high near 80 degrees. More scattered showers and thunderstorms before 8 p.m. Wednesday night. It will be mostly cloudy with a temperature low of around 62 degrees. And on Thursday, scattered showers with thunderstorms also possible after 2 p.m. It will be partly sunny with a temperature high near 74 degrees. And more scattered showers and thunderstorms before 8 p.m. on Thursday night. It will be partly cloudy with a temperature low of around 54 degrees. And that is your weather update from WGXC 90.7 FM radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
You've tuned in all sorts of creative community voices on the radio at 90.7 FM on Wednesday, September 8th. Including at 10 a.m., it's time for the All Mixed Up show, with the first hour about Labor Day songs and stories, and the second hour revisiting the September 11th attacks of 2001. At noon, after the local news, it's time for the Bedazzled Radio Hour, with Spike Priggen broadcasting live from his Spike's Record Rack store on Main Street in Catskill. 2 p.m., it's time for the debut episode of Rock and Roll Radio, with rock songs about radio waves featured, with skits, radio recordings, and more. At 3 p.m., it's time for the Radio Survivor Show. And today, they speak with Thomas Dougherty, professor of American Studies at Brandeis University, about how radio covered the crime of the century, the abduction of the Lindbergh baby. At 7 p.m., we go live to WBAI in New York City with the Off the Hook Show from the 2600.com Hackers Collective, talking about technology issues live on the radio. And then tune in for Dance Hall Reggae at 8 p.m. on WGXC 90.7 FM.
To get a local event mentioned on All Together Now, go to WGXC.org and click on Add an Event at the top of the page, and copy and paste the information about your event in the boxes. Let's all get involved in our community. See what's going on at WGXC.org in the community calendar.
Tune in or turn out Saturday, October 23rd to John Cage's Rozart Mix, realized by artist Aaron Dillaway at Bard College in Annandale-on-Hudson. The performance will be at the John Cage Trust from noon to sunset, with collaborating tape players including Twig Harper from Nautical Almanac, Rosie Actor Engel, John Weiss, Mike Colino, and C. Lavender. John Cage's Rozart Mix was composed in 1965 for a performance at Brandeis University's Rose Art Gallery. The score is correspondence between John Cage and Alvin Lucier concerning preparations for the concert utilizing tape loops. Aaron Dillaway, who's known for his work in Wolf Eyes and many other collaborations, was a former Wave Farm resident who worked with tape loops and cart machines in his residency in Accra. Anyone attending this event must show proof of vaccination and register to make an appointment to be scheduled to see the show. You can find out more about the Saturday, October 23rd performance of John Cage's Rozart Mix, realized by artist Aaron Dillaway, in the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org.
If you can't make your local town meetings but want to attend, WGXC can help. Currently, local volunteers make recordings and live web streams of the Catskill Town Meetings, the Hudson Common Council Meetings, and the Columbia County Board of Supervisor Meetings. If you miss the live web streams, volunteers post recordings of these meetings as soon as possible at WGXC.org on the newsroom page and in the audio archives. If you're going to local meetings and you have a phone in your pocket, you can help too. Email info@wgxc.org and WGXC will help you share recordings of local meetings and events. You can also use the free WGXC app, available in the App Store, to do your own live webcast from local events. Contact info@wgxc.org for more information about how you can help share valuable local information about your community with your friends and neighbors.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Wednesday, September 8th. A dry start and a wet end today with some mugginess in between. 64 degrees starts us out on the thermometer this morning, and that will rise to 81 degrees by about 2 p.m. 25 mile per hour wind gusts are expected at about that time. A little bit later, at around 3 p.m., rain and thunder enter the area and will continue all night. A low of 65 is expected. Matching dew points will keep it feeling muggy. Tomorrow night, chance of rain lingers all day. A high of 73 is expected. Friday and Saturday are looking dry with highs in the mid-70s. Pollen levels for today will be low. Today's tide schedule is high tide at 4:09 a.m., then low tide at 11:09 a.m., then high tide again at 4:45 p.m., and low tide again at 11:23 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 71 degrees. Sunset today will be at 7:06 p.m., and sunrise tomorrow will be at 6:24 a.m. Looking way up, we see early this morning a solar flare disrupted radio communications over the Pacific, and we have a potential incoming coronal mass ejection. Solar wind speed is currently 392 kilometers per second at 8.2 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently terrible. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 4, unsettled. The current sunspot number is 85. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Michael and Lisa Lindsay Hogg of Claverick, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to wgxc.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
Yo! Hold up! Time out! Time out! Y'all take a chill! You need to cool that out! And that's the double truth, Ruth.
Welcome to 2021 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
It does make it easier than ever before for anybody to go cast a ballot. It does also, however, make sure that it is harder for people to cheat at the ballot box in Texas.
Texas Governor Greg Abbott signed a controversial election reform bill into law Tuesday, which includes new restrictions on voting by mail, increased voter ID requirements, and gives more authority to partisan poll watchers. Texas Democratic U.S. Rep. Colin Allred calls it a solution in search of a problem.
We did not have any significant voter fraud in Texas in the last election. In fact, we had 11 million Texans vote. That was a great thing.
Opponents quickly filed suit claiming the law violates the state constitution. U.S. Capitol Police are developing a security plan ahead of a September 18th Justice for J6 rally to support the roughly 570 people charged in the January 6th riot. Some far-right members of Congress have questioned the treatment of the defendants, and several were denied access to view their conditions at the D.C. Department of Corrections. Secretary of State Antony Blinken disputes Republican claims the Taliban is holding Americans hostage. At a press conference from Qatar, he clarified there are a few U.S. citizens who have been unable to evacuate on chartered flights from a northern Afghan city.
Without personnel on the ground, we can't verify the accuracy of manifests, the identities of passengers, flight plans, or aviation security protocols. So this is a challenge.
Blinken said the Taliban assured the U.S. all American citizens and Afghan citizens with valid travel documents will be allowed to leave. The White House is asking Congress for $6 billion to help resettle 95,000 Afghans in the U.S. and $24 billion for natural disasters, including the aftermath of Hurricane Ida. President Joe Biden toured damage caused by the storm in New York and New Jersey on Tuesday and called it evidence of climate change.
Walking these neighborhoods, meeting the families and the first responders, seeing how folks are doing after this destruction and pain and another devastating storm is an eye-opener.
Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders is dismissing calls from moderate Senator Joe Manchin to hit pause on Democrats' $3.5 trillion budget reconciliation package.
At the end of the day, after a lot of negotiations and pain, and I'm going to be on the phone all week, what we are going to do is pass the most comprehensive bill for working families that this country has seen in a long way with the 50 votes plus the vice president.
Manchin says he's concerned about the impact on inflation. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis is rejecting rumors of a possible 2024 presidential run. DeSantis is a favorite among Republicans due to his opposition to COVID-19 mandates and hostility toward the media. His comments come as former President Donald Trump ramps up his own fundraising events. I'm Mary Sherman for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our A Trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy online at publicnewsservice.org.
Today, affordable housing is our theme on the WGXC Morning Show. And first, we hear this story from Moses Nagel from WOOC about the extension of the eviction moratorium and what it means for low-income tenants and property owners in the Capital Region.
As the COVID pandemic has raged through the country and the area, health officials have urged people to avoid moving around and changing housing as much as possible. The federal government and New York State have passed eviction moratoriums to stop people who are unable to pay rent from being put out on the street. They have not, however, been so generous with rent and mortgage aid or forgiveness. This means that for those who lost work during the pandemic, back rent may be piling up to unmanageable heights. It also means that some landlords are stuck with no rent income and no recourse. The federal government has created a large fund to help pay some of these costs, but up to now only a tiny portion of the money has been released to the tenants and landlords who it is intended for. I spoke with Liz Hitt, the executive director for the Homeless and Travelers Aid Society. Her group tries to match people in need of housing with decent and affordable apartments. She explained that this area already had a shortage even before COVID hit.
The Capital Region Apartment Association keeps track of vacancy rates, occupancy rates, but things were tight prior to March of 2020 when COVID shut things down. And by tight, I mean this. We would search oftentimes for several weeks to find an apartment which the people we serve could afford. So when we use subsidies to help people find housing, understandably, we're capped by how much we can pay, how much the client can pay. And that's broken down by bedroom size. And then we're supposed to take that unit and compare it to two other units to ensure that we're getting the best deal, per se, for this person. So that's always been tough. In addition to not having units, it's also important that we have units which are habitable. And by that, we mean we really want units that we would live in. That's the test. So a unit might pass inspection, but it might not really be someplace you nor I nor your listeners would want to live. So understandably, that was already challenging. Of course, COVID made that much worse. We have multiple landlords that we work with, as you might imagine, and we're very understanding of their situation. So while the clients or the people we serve have continued to pay their rent, unfortunately, several others have not been able, for multiple reasons, to necessarily pay their rent. So even the landlords we work with, they may have some units with us, they may have some units with other people, and it's been very difficult for them. We have a lot of understanding for that, a lot of empathy for that. None of us would want to suddenly stop being paid. And that's what's happened, unfortunately, for lots of landlords. Funding from the federal level down to the state, unfortunately, as we've all heard, it's just been hard to deploy. There's a lot of paperwork. There are numerous questions that have to be answered. I was chatting with one of our employees the other day. She's been with us 7 or 8 years, and she said, I filled out this paperwork for the consumer. We were sitting together. It wasn't easy. She found the paperwork probably more challenging than it should be. So if we can't put these funds to work, if we can't make landlords whole, make sure that people aren't going to be evicted once the moratorium lifted, and as I'm sure you know, that got pushed back to January 15th under our new governor. She pulled back the assembly, pulled back the Senate, and said, let's get this done. They did. I can't imagine that will be lifted in the middle of January, i.e. the dead of winter. So we're all somewhat thinking that it could be spring 2022 before the moratorium in New York State is lifted, which would probably be good, of course, for the people we serve. We support that, but we have to get landlords paid.
In your opinion, why has this money been so hard to access?
I do think sometimes we're all afraid of taxpayer dollars being used as they shouldn't be, or people being able to access funds when they really didn't qualify. I am here to say that doesn't happen very often. It's really pretty rare. So I would propose, you know, let's not make it that difficult. Let's lower the barriers for everyone in the process. I will say in Albany County, we've been very fortunate. The Albany County Department of Social Services, they've got some great employees, and they have been on the street, literally, because they've been in front of our building. They set up a table, and they're meeting one-on-one with people to do everything they can to get people completed, applied, and get them funding.
Tammy, a food service worker, has been on the other side of this problem. She's been living in an apartment in a barn for the last several months. Now that she and her partner are both working, they're trying to find a better place. However, they haven't had much luck.
I started working in January, and for that solid 8 months, I was calling and writing and emailing. I mean, I've looked everywhere. Craigslist, I've had friends helping me look. I thought I did the network thing, and I can't even get a landlord to answer me back. There was one landlord doing a literal open house for a rental. You know, I don't know. I changed up my Facebook picture, you know, because a lot of the same ones I'm finding are on Facebook, so I changed up my picture to look normal,
uh-huh.
You know,
wow.
Like, yeah, rent, yeah, to me.
Liz Hitt says she has seen some of this happening to the people they serve as well, as property owners have become more cautious.
So people come into homeless shelters, people come out of homeless shelters, they move into rental units, but because of the moratorium and the pandemic, just the availability of units has lessened because nobody's moving. Everybody's kind of still frozen in place. So those units that might have been available for us to inspect and review and examine aren't there. So this affordable housing crisis per se that's happening right now is in part due to some of that. I would also propose that landlords are evaluating whether or not they even want to keep doing this. We have certainly heard from some landlords, they have shared with us, this just isn't worth it. I've always enjoyed being a landlord. It's been good for me and my family. But a lot of landlords are just kind of mom and pop situations, or mom and mom, right, pop and pop. So people, I think, feel a little burned, a little more leery. We have seen firsthand that landlords are asking for more details. What's your rental history? Not that they didn't always ask about rental history, but if they knew they were working with an agency like ours, they probably knew there was no rental history or very little rental history. And now they're getting stricter. We must have full rental history. We want to see that credit check. We want to make sure that person has twice as much income, three times as much income as we were asking for prior to March of 2020.
Liz Hitt from the Homeless and Travelers Aid Society urged people to get involved if they want to help the housing vulnerable in their area.
Contact the not-for-profit within your community. If you're in Troy, call Joseph's House. Call Unity House. Unity House does some fabulous work in Troy, from domestic violence to homelessness to hunger. Call Unity House. If you're in Albany, call IPH. Call us. Call the Capital City Rescue Mission. Call Catholic Charities. If you're in Schenectady, call Mike and his team at the City Mission. Call the Salvation Army at Booth Home. If you're in Saratoga, Shelters of Saratoga, they're absolutely on the ground level outreach, housing, hunger. There's something in your neighborhood you can help. Get on their website. There's a portal. Call them. Someone might not call you back that same day, but they're going to call you back.
Reporting for Hudson Mohawk Magazine, this is Moses Nagel.
You're listening to The Morning Show on WGXC 90.7 FM.
The National Weather Service in Albany is warning that severe thunderstorms are possible later today on Wednesday. In advance of a cold front, scattered strong to severe thunderstorms will be possible with damaging winds, large hail, and an isolated tornado as possible from Albany south, and mostly on the western side of the Hudson River are where the storms are supposed to be the most intense today. Last week, the New York State Legislature came back into session to pass an extension of the eviction moratorium through January. The eviction moratorium passed easily through the state assembly and state senate that's controlled by Democrats. But locally, Democrat Dede Barrett, who represents Columbia and Dutchess counties, and Republican Chris Tague, who represents Greene and Schoharie counties, both voted against extending the eviction moratorium. The Hudson-Catskill Housing Coalition had previously demonstrated in front of Barrett's Hudson office against her position on the eviction moratorium. The affordable housing crisis is our theme today on the WGXC Morning Show. And next, WGXC's Randall Martin and Reverend Kim Singletary talk with Columbia County Fair Housing Department Director Bill Fisher and Columbia County Housing Authority Board Chair Teresa Mayhew about local housing programs and pandemic relief.
Without further ado, I want to present to you, our friends out there in radio listening land, Ms. Teresa Mayhew and Mr. Bill Fisher. Hello, Terry. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Kim. Hi, Randall.
So, how are you all doing? You sound good.
Well, I'm doing fine. Terry can speak for herself, but I'm doing well, thanks. I hope everybody on the other side of this call is doing well as well.
Oh, thank you so much.
And I can ditto what Bill just said. Thank you very kindly and for those nice words. And I think to kick off our portion of your program today, we're going to have Bill talk about what's going on with the, you know, the whole thing with the moratoriums and rental assistance programs and folks that are underwater with their mortgages. And then I will bring up the rear and talk about a program where we are hopefully hosting in early October. So I'm going to turn it over to Bill. And let's
okay. Well, thank you, Terry, for that segue in. What I'd really like to hit on today is the Federal Emergency Rental Assistance Program, which is called by the acronym ERAP, E-R-A-P, and which is administered in New York State by the Office of Temporary and Disability Assistance. There was an allocation of some $47.5 billion by the federal government for this program to help those tenants who are struggling to pay their rent, and it also covers people who are struggling along with having difficulty in paying their rent to also pay their utility bills. So it's a very good program. The money is out there, and we just got to get the word out and have as many people apply as can to get this benefit. It went into effect in June 1st, and so, but I think the money is going out rather slowly. So Terry and I felt that getting involved with your program here, Kim and Randall, would be the way to maybe help get the word out to more of the folks. We've done some letters to the editor to try to get the word out. We have a website where we have some information posted. But what this program does, and it really is an excellent program for those who are eligible, it will pay up to 12 months of rent arrears and a like amount of utility bills, gas and electric. And so we're encouraging people who need these funds to get out there and apply for them. It is a two-part application process in that the landlords have some things they have to do as well. It is open to anyone who has incomes of 80% or below the area median income. So that can vary by county, and it also can vary by household size. So the best way to get this information is probably to call your DSS and in Columbia County, ask for St. Catherine's Children's Center, who's helping with applications. And their number would be 828-9411. Ask for St. Catherine's. And then also the Community Action Group of Greene County is helping with this as well. And that's 943-9205. Both, of course, area codes 518. So there's information to be gleaned there. There's also help with applications. There is a number to call also for the Office of Temporary and Disability Assistance. That's the OTDA. And that number would be, give me a minute, I can get that number really quickly. That number is 1-844-691-7368. And the OTDA is the one that is administering the program. And as I go along here, anybody wants to stop me and have some questions, I will certainly try to answer them for you. But for the tenant to be eligible, as I mentioned, they can't make more than 80% of the area median income. They also have to be have been impacted by loss of income or additional costs incurred due to the COVID-19 pandemic. They also have can be facing homelessness or instability of residency. So those are some of the important criteria for the applicant to be eligible. The applicant has to provide evidence of income. And I know normally you think of what the income was for the year 2020, but the OTDA, when underwriting these applications, will look at your last paycheck. And if your last paycheck or statement shows that you're 80% or below, you would qualify just by evidence of that paycheck. You also have to establish proof of identity. And these can be things if you've applied for an enhanced license at the DMV, you know what they're usually looking for, a photo ID. They look for things like birth certificate, baptismal certificates. Also, a passport would qualify for proof of identity. They ask for proof of residency, and the residency would be can be proven just by, normal postal service. You know, was your name on a recent or a current electric bill or an insurance bill or something like that? That would qualify as proof of residency. They also look for how much rent is due, what the monthly rent is, and how much the arrears are. And of course, now, to qualify for payment on a utility bill, you also have to be in arrears on your rent. So you can't just have a past due utility bill and expect to be approved for that. So basically, those are the kind of things that the applicant or the tenant would have to provide. Now, there's things also that the landlord has to provide. The landlord has to provide a signed W-9 form for the IRS. They have to provide a bank account number to which and a bank to which direct deposit can be made of any payments that are approved, because the money does not go to the tenant. It would go directly to the landlord. The landlord also has to provide proof of how much rent is owed. And this can be in the form of a ledger, or if a ledger does not exist, the landlord can, by swearing or attesting to the amount owed, that this is true and correct. So the landlord does have to provide certain things. The landlord also has to agree, and Terry pointed this out to me the other day, the landlord has to agree not to increase the rent for a year after payment. And of course, naturally, the landlord should not be increasing any rent that's owed. In other words, if 12 months was owed at $1,000 a month, the landlord can't say, well, the first 6 months of that was $1,000, but the last 6 months is $1,200. Can't do that. Has to be can't raise the rent for the arrears that are being requested, and also cannot raise the rent for 1 year after the payment is received by the landlord. So this is pretty good protection for the tenant in that respect. Also, the landlord cannot evict a tenant in a expired lease situation. Naturally, if the landlord gets payment for the arrears and the tenant begins falling behind again, the landlord can start a proceeding for an eviction based on non-payment. But they can't start an eviction merely because the tenant has overstayed the expiration date of a lease or the expiration date of a notice to vacate the premises. He can't do that, and that also is for a year. So the landlord has to provide certain things as well, and he also has to agree that the amount requested and verified by both the tenant and the landlord, that amount requested and if paid by the ERAP program will satisfy any rent that is all the rent that is due. The landlord also has to waive any late fees that may have accrued during the period in which the tenant was in arrears. So these conditions may be some of the reasons why landlords are not entirely on board with this. I know I've had calls where tenants may be owing $1,000 to $20,000. And in some cases, very few, but in a couple of cases that I've dealt with, the landlords don't want to agree to that, maybe because of their inability to increase the rents or make these other confirmations with regard to evictions or those kind of things. So if the we do encourage, at least I do, and I think the agencies that are working with these people encourage the tenants to make application, because if there is so-called provisional approval by the OTDA and assistance is available and the landlord is not complying with these things, the tenant, if the landlord were to, let's say, take some kind of action or proceeding against the tenant to evict them, the tenants could use the fact that the landlord is not cooperating, and whereby they could use this as a defense. The tenant has done everything they could do to get the landlord the money. The landlord is not cooperating. So chances are that if the landlord were to take the tenant to court, the tenant may very well have a defense there to say, well, there was the money and you didn't do your part. So,
brings to mind a question that came to me. What if the tenant is not cooperating, or the tenant has, you know, did not realize that there was help out there, felt, you know, a hopeless situation, I can't recover from this, I'm just going to move on. Is there some kind of consideration for a landlord in that situation?
The landlord can actually begin an application for the tenant. Of course, the tenant has to provide everything that is required for eligibility, but the landlord could actually take it upon themselves to begin an application. And the way I see things as they're prescribed, the Office of Temporary Disability Assistance, who's administering the program, can go to the tenant and say the landlord has started this application, and so we need your information to go forward with it. And likewise, the tenant application, if there is information needed from the landlord, the underwriters or the OTDA could go and locate the landlord and get the information from the landlord. Now, if the application is incomplete, as far as the landlord is concerned, the application will be kept open for 180 days, that's roughly 6 months. Then, of course, it might be deep fixed after that. But the OTDA, as I see it, is doing everything possible to get all the information they need, whether it be from the tenant or the landlord.
I see. Okay, sounds good. So those numbers, the phone numbers that you gave are DSS, St. Catharines is helping with applications, and the number you gave for them was 518-828-9411. And then the Greene County Community Action Group, their number is 518-943-9205.
That's
and the number for the State Office of Temporary Assistance on Disability is 1-844-691-7368.
That's right. And I think, because as I say, these AMIs or the area median income is different in each county, and it varies by household size, that it might be good to start off with the OTDA, which is that 1-844 number, and get what assistance you can from them. One other thing, when you start these applications, they're all done online, and when you start these applications, you have to complete them. In other words, you can't say, okay, I started the application, I got halfway through today, I'll finish the rest tomorrow by saving it. It has to be done in one shot.
Wow.
Yeah.
Hmm. It seems to me like there's a lot of money out there still for these programs.
American Rescue Plan has put out, they initially put $25 billion out there countrywide, and then they added, they had what they called the ERA-1, which was the $25 million, and then they came up with the ERA-2, which bounced this up to